from being a part-time cashier in a bank, three kids under the age of six. You had to make it work.
From Humble Street to Harley Street, a lot of people feel that they don't have enough money. It's not what you have, it's what you do with what you have. Calculating all my spending, I knew exactly where every penny and every pound was going. The financial tycoons, they all have some form of budgeting. Fear is one of the most powerful emotions there is. And if you're controlled by your emotions, especially fear, a lot of what you're doing is going to be so problematic. You're on social media and looking, you're seeing all these people having all these things. For one, you don't know how they've got it, what they've had to do to get it.
What a bloody hero you are. Hello and welcome to another weekly episode of Strategy and Tragedy, the business podcast, which is all about sharing the highs, the lows, the realities of what it takes to actually build a successful business today. I interview phenomenal entrepreneurs, investors, subject matter experts, one of whom joins me on today's show. I'm going to be interviewing Norma Cassius, the money mental health expert. Norma, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So money and mental health, they are so closely linked.
It's absolutely
so perfect that you have dedicated your expertise to like those two areas combined. Was it one first, then the other, or do you do them both combined? Talk us through your background to kick us off firstly.
Sure. So it was the financial side of it first. So I worked within the financial sector for over 20 years. Whilst working in the financial sector, I became a single mother.
Wow.
And at that point in time, I had a mortgage to pay, a car to run, three children aged 6 years and under, all on a part-time salary.
Wow.
So I had to be really, really frugal with my money. I had to be on point with my money. And I really learnt my money management practices from my parents, both my parents. And they managed their money in completely different ways. So my dad was, right now, reflecting back on it, he was like an entrepreneur. Back in the 50s, he had two houses in Jamaica and a dry cleaners. He then came to England. He's part of the Windrush generation, and he bought the largest house on the road. So he had all those properties. So it was like he used to drop all these one-liners to me and my siblings. There's six of us. And he used to say things like, Nama, because he was from Jamaica, never ever rent a property. Because if you rent a property for 25 years and you don't pay your rent for 1 week, you will get chopped out. So that was so the seed in my mind. And I thought, that is not going to be my fate. So at the age of 21, I bought my first property. My mum, on the other hand, so my dad was very frugal with his money, gave her the exact penny, you know, exact amount every week, regardless of what needs changed. And so she had to make the money work for her. Now, my dad, old school, we wanted all the West Indian food, and that was quite expensive. Well, it's quite expensive to have that imported in. He would have his dinner on, like meat on one plate, his hard food, Jamaican food on another plate, and a separate plate. So he was that, you know, and all these expectations and very high expectations. And my mum had to make it work. So she sewed all our clothes, even down to our underwear. Do you know what I mean? It felt like we had everything and nothing was lacking. But I now know, just reflecting back on that, that definitely was a skill, because she never had any surplus, do you know what I mean, for anything special. And so just gleaning from both my parents. So when I became a single parent, I had to sort of like go into automatic mode. Was I going to sink or swim? And I knew I had three children that I was responsible for. I said, if my mum can do it with six, I can do it with three.
Wow, how inspiring and motivational. It's so stressful, but you're put in that situation to sink or swim, as you say. So the phrase, invention is the mother of necessity, comes to mind here. You 100%. Know, you have to work with what you've got. So do you mind me asking, so let's stick with this chapter of your life for a moment then. So you're part-time working in finances. What was your sort of role at that point? What was your sort of, you know,
I was a
level?
Cashier. I was a cashier at that point. Yeah. That's the first entry role that you get within, like, it was Abbey National at the time. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's now Santander.
Yeah.
And so I was a cashier. I was working part-time. It was such a stressful time, being a single parent anyway, but, you know, dropping my kids off at school, driving to the station. Thankfully, I'm fortunate that I did have a car, and I live in East London. I was working in West London.
Wow.
I had to rush to work. It was like 4 hours, my part-time work, do my work, and you couldn't leave if your till didn't balance. Mm. So the stress of that with life, and do you know what I mean? Just all of those stresses, making sure my till balanced every day, that was just a stress for you know, any cashier.
Yeah.
Then rushing home, picking up the, you know, rushing back, picking up the kids, it was just... It was a stressful time, but do you know what I mean? Just it does make me emotional sometimes because it was, you know, very challenging. And, you know, I had to make my ends meet. I had to make my money work for me. Mm. And I just think back to a lot of people in this, especially economic crisis, the cost of living crisis, where they don't have any financial education, or they don't have any, they've not learned it from their environment.
Yeah.
They've had to just make their own way. And a lot of people can't make it work.
Mm, yeah.
And so that's where, you know, my money and mental health combination comes in.
It makes total sense, and we're definitely going to get stuck into all of that. But first of all, Norma, I need to say, what a bloody hero you are.
Thank you.
I talk about, and by the way, I do recommend listeners, straight after this episode, stick around, listen to episode 0. It's only 6 minutes long, put it at double speed, it's 3 minutes. That just explains a bit of the philosophy and the context to the show. One of the things that I talk about in that first, you know, 0 episode is how much entrepreneurship has become overly glamorized in recent years, especially with tech entrepreneurs. You've got the likes of Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the classics. But people like you, single mums, raising the next generation, multiple kids, balancing everything, managing a part-time job is just phenomenal. Like that's incredible. Like Elon Musk doesn't hold a flame to that at all.
Absolutely.
You know, so I have to give you kudos for that. You know, I'm even happier to have you on the show and interview you and share some of your incredible story. So again, before we get stuck into today's generation, sure, and everything else, to bridge from this first opening chapter, what are some of the biggest habits or lessons that have stuck with you today that you teach others that came from that really stressful time, from being a part-time cashier in a bank, Abbey National, 3 kids under the age of 6, you had to make it work. What were some of the things that you did that you can share with our listeners?
Sure. I had to walk around with a notepad and a pen in my bag, calculating all my spending.
Mm.
I had to,
what year was this? Sorry, the 90s?
This was, 1990 is when I became a single mother.
Wow.
My children are now in their 30s. I'm a grandmother.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to be walking, you know, and so it's, everybody talks about budgeting.
Mm.
The financial tycoons, they all have some form of budgeting because you have to know what you're working with. And so people say to me, Norma, how did you manage? In the midst of that, because I knew how to manage my money, I knew how to budget, I knew exactly where every penny and every pound was going. I could account for it and I knew where I could assign money to.
So the tracking. So you would carry around a notepad and pen.
Tracking every penny.
Write down kind of what you would buy at the shops.
What I would make a list before I would go out. I used to be shopping in 4 supermarkets every week. And if I saw something 10 pence cheaper in a shop, I would say to the kids, oh, I forgot something, let's go back. And I would literally go back to make sure, just to make sure that I could have, you know, buy everything I needed.
Mm.
But in the midst of that tracking, I knew what I was left with.
Yeah.
Every year, the bank used to give us an annual bonus. And I used to use that bonus to fly my children out every year.
Aww.
So we went to the whole of the Caribbean, the whole of Europe. And people used to say to me, Norma, how are you doing this? This is my colleagues that are working full-time, no children, or may have a partner. And I had to say to them, it's not what you have, it's what you do with what you have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just sticking with your notepad and pen, you know, mental image for a second, what I want to just highlight for listeners is The visibility, the tracking, the intentionality, you saying about writing a list before you go, it makes it that bit easier to not get sidetracked or buy another packet of crisps or whatever. You've got that. With the bonuses, what I'm curious about, oh my God, you know, I could talk about money all day long, because I think especially as women, we have got to destigmatize. We've got to take away the taboo. Talking about money, especially as women, especially as what you say, we don't get taught it in schools. So I'm definitely getting excited now. So question for you. So bonuses, why, apologies if this is super personal, but I'm just really curious.
No, it's fine.
Why did you decide to put that money towards the family holidays as opposed to putting it into more of a buffer for savings or investments at that point? What was your rationale behind using your bonuses in that way?
For me, I felt back then there was a stigma, and there still was a stigma for like single parents and your children or your family's less than. My children have all got degrees, do you know what I mean? I made sure that we had the best of the best my money could buy. So I had a mortgage. So I felt I had some type of investment.
Mm.
And so therefore, you know, I've struggled all year to make ends meet. Let me show my, you know, I wanted to culturize my children to show them that, you know, we can still have a good life. Mm. Believe it or not, when we used to go on holiday, their rucksacks were filled to the brim. Now, it weren't with dollies or electrical toys. It was rice, biscuits, and me being resourceful again. And I took that from my mum. Do you know what I mean? So when we got to our destination, we just had to buy like meat and fruit. Do you know what I mean?
Whoa.
Just to make sure that I made that
make
we
it
could
happen.
Make it happen.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love how you actually reframed that misconception for me there around these holidays being an investment in your kids,
mm-hmm.
culturalizing them. You've still got to live your life as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
You know, money as a tool as well. There's so much emotion wrapped up in money. There's so
absolutely.
Much stress. Again, the mental health connection we'll talk more about. But it is a tool. It's a tool to enjoy yourself, see the world, invest in yourself, whatever you decide to put it towards, but just doing it in a sensible, strategic way. Okay. All right. Amazing. So you manage your finances. So the thing that kind of stuck with you was kind of tracking everything, being intentional. So where do we go next in the story from here? How did you then build your kind of career and what it is now with the money and the mental health?
Sure. So after working in finance for, you know, over 2 decades, I felt like I wanted to do something a bit more meaningful. I'm a Christian, so at church I joined the Hope Line, which is like a counselling telephone line. And people used to say, Norma, you really do well with that. You really, you know, are helping so many people, the way you come across, your compassion, your empathy. And they said, somebody suggested, why don't you go and take that up as a career? Light bulb moment. I thought, yeah, let me try it. So I went to start studying as a psychotherapist whilst still working in the bank part-time.
Wow.
And then I went on. It took years and years and years to qualify because it's a long process, especially doing it part-time. And so I became a qualified psychotherapist. I now have a private practice in Harley Street. These are things that people say, do you know, affirmations and whatever. And I said, I'm going to be in Harley Street, and Harley Street I am.
Oh,
do you know what I mean? You're
giving me goosebumps.
You know, I own a few properties, one in Miami.
Wow.
And yeah, and so I want the best my money can buy.
Yeah.
And I teach people to, yeah, you can live your best life without getting into debt, but you just know what to do. And so I financially and psychologically educate people.
Uh-huh.
Because it's really about understanding the psychology of money. What do I mean by that? Your thoughts, your beliefs, and your attitudes towards spending, saving, budgeting, and making investments.
Okay, so before we get stuck into that as well, I just, again, have to punctuate this point in the story with your parents. I mean, I'm not sure if they're still with us, but how proud they would be if they've seen what you've made of yourself. Like, you, from the sounds of it, you know, you're a completely self-made woman.
Mm-hmm.
You've completely pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. And this is from, you know, these people who came back over here, unknown territory, took a risk. And obviously they wanted the best for their children the same way you want the best for yours. So how incredible, what an incredible rags to riches story, I guess.
Well, saying that, I've written an article for the Single Mothers Business magazine.
Wow.
So I'm going to be doing I'm going to be one of their guest speakers in June. And I've written an article called From Humble Street to Harley Street.
I love that.
Just telling my story.
Yeah,
and for me, it's about giving people hope.
Yeah.
You know, as a woman, you know, we are disadvantaged in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
And I'm here to show people, I mean, I'm 61 now, and people say, you know what I mean? There's no stopping me. Well, Tina Turner, I'll be Tina. Tina Turner's part of my high shoes. I'll be like, you'll be burying me in my heels. Do you know what I mean? It's about having that quality of life and understanding, you know, with the economic crisis that we're in, and so many people are affected. My heart goes out to people that cannot manage their money. Yeah.
So on the psychology piece then, so let's make sure I don't lose that thread. So what are the most common stresses, beliefs, I guess. What's the most common sort of money mindset that you've come across where you think, if only I had a podcast to come and talk on and let as many people know this is something I want to change and correct for a lot of people?
A lot of people feel that they don't have enough money. Mm. I run a financial boot camp, and pre-boot camp, I ask people to send me all their, you know, their statements so I can have a look, and to send me a budget. And when they send me the budget pre-boot camp, when we actually get to the boot camp and I start taking them through some of the processes, they are always hundreds of pounds out. Because a lot of it is guesswork. Do you know what I mean? Part of my boot camp is going through a budget process. And budgeting is just not your income and expenditure. It's techniques and skills to budget properly. Because if it was that simple, everybody would be budgeting. It wouldn't be a problem. But it's finding those financial leakages. I mean, we work a lot, you know, nowadays, we use our card for most things, right? And people just swiping left, right and centre, not recording anything. Yeah. And so when this, you know, they look in their account one day, they look back into that account, the account's been hacked. No, it's because things have been coming out which you have not been keeping a track of.
This just goes back again. I want to highlight the importance of the tracking, absolutely, the visibility. And I think so many people, myself included, I'm definitely better at this now than I used to be, but I would imagine the vast majority of people, they don't even like looking at their bank account, right? They don't want to check it. They don't want to see it. It's out of sight, out of mind. And then as you say, when you do invariably have to go and check it at least kind of once a month or whatever, it's like, oh my goodness. I'm always flabbergasted how much I spend on things like coffees, actually, just like takeaway oat latte, especially here in London. Like it's creeping up to the best part of a fiver.
Yeah.
£5. And as you say, if you have one coffee out and about, say you swipe on your card, 5 coffees a week, that's already £25. That's £100 a month. You're like, wow. And that's just, it's the leakages, as you say.
Absolutely.
It's the leakages.
And so for me being a single parent, I wanted to live my best life. And that's what I want everybody else that I work with to do the same. So for example, that's a good example. Starbucks, I think Pret as well, they do like a coffee package where I think it's something like £20 a month or £25 a month. And you can have 5 cups of coffee or whatever your drink is a day. So, I mean, you know, instead of paying £25 a week for the 5 cups of coffee, you can spend £20 or £25 a month for 5 coffees per day. If you can't afford that, somebody at work, if you just double up, do you know what I mean? To £10 each.
Are you saying that's a good deal?
That's a good deal.
Because I thought where you might be going with that is the danger also, not only with the cards like you're saying, swiping here, there, not having that same visibility as going around with a notepad and pen, but with these sorts of things, with like subscriptions and packages, sorts of offers, it's easy to sign up to stuff.
Absolutely.
Thinking it's a good deal.
Yeah.
And believing that you'll use it more than you actually will.
Absolutely. And that's part of the exploration I do with people, finding those financial leakages, going through all of your expenses. If you have whatever subscriptions you have, then let's talk about those subscriptions. Are they working for you? When was the last time you used it? Do you know what I mean? Because some people say, it's something I really need for my mental well-being. I need my coffees every day. Then stick with it. Where else can we cut back on? But be realistic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Live your quality of life without the pressure, the stress.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Does
I
that
definitely
make sense?
Do, completely. And I feel really aware of how imprisoned we are in not only our capitalist society, but also our world of social media. My background is in marketing, and I have enough of an awareness and enough knowledge. And also I'm very thankful that I grew up without social media. So
yes,
I had the opportunity, my brain could form of its own. But these days you've got ads coming at you left, right and centre. And you just saying there, your comment about, you know, needing the coffee, it's like, okay, what do we actually need? What
Absolutely.
Do we actually need? All right, so I'm conscious of applying this, connecting this conversation to entrepreneurship. So obviously my listeners are founders, they're maybe thinking of starting a business, or they've just started, potentially a bit further along and looking to scale their company. So, you know, money's what makes the world goes round. We all need money. Finances applies to everyone. But just looking at it through that sort of lens, I guess to start off with is, what tips could you give earlier stage entrepreneurs if they're thinking of setting up a business? Entrepreneurship can be a privilege. You need you need money to to get going. It's a risk. Sometimes you need to hold on to your part-time job to feed your three kids. How could somebody, how could they overcome maybe limiting beliefs with their money if they're thinking of taking that leap and going into entrepreneurship?
Sure. I think the first thing to do, as I said, is to know your numbers. Know exactly what you do have. Because obviously if you're starting a business, obviously there's going to be expenses, right? And it's understanding exactly what those expenses are. Another thing I would say, once you know your numbers, then you'll know if you'll need to get a loan, whether you've got savings that can, you know, that can pay for what you need. It's about knowing what you've got. Mm. Once you know what you've got, then you know what you need to do. Mm. Another thing I would say is if it's just a thought, and you've not taken any action yet, knowing your credit score. Because if you do need to take out a loan, the better your credit score, the lower interest rate, the better financial products you will get. So, you know, if you need to take out a loan and say like £10,000, for example, and your credit score is quite good, you would get a much lower interest rate for somebody that's got a not a good credit score. And taking out that same loan, they would get a much higher interest rate and they would have to pay back much more. So it's, again, understand preparing. It's something that you just don't go into. It's about doing your homework, doing your due diligence in whatever you need to do, and making sure you're in the right frame of mind as well. Because I've worked with many people and their money has really overwhelmed them to such a state, we can't even look at the finances. We have to work with your mental health first to get it in the right place. And I'm not talking about severe. I mean, I've worked, obviously, on the scale of mental health. Just the stress and anxiety that it's causing people. When you're in that high levels of anxiety and stress and even depression, you're not able to make informed decisions.
Yeah, of course, the emotions just take over, don't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then if you are making decisions when you're in that kind of an emotional state, they're not the best decisions for you.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a lot easier said than done.
Absolutely.
How can you, what can be the first steps that people can start to take to calm down the nervous system? Again, I know it's, we're kind of oversimplifying it in conversation, sure, but the stress, the anxiety, the depression, what can people do if they're maybe like on that, in that middle space, we're like, oh, I'm a bit antsy about it, but how can they avoid going too far down?
Yeah, as I said, once you know what you're, because the financial and the stress and the anxiety, a lot of that is about not knowing and not understanding exactly your financial situation.
So it's like getting confidence. Absolutely. With getting a handle on
A handle of what is going on.
Yeah.
Once you are able to get a handle, and that may be that you need some financial education just to help you get a handle on what is going on, because once you know exactly what you're working with, then that reduces your anxiety, it reduces the stress,
because you don't have that uncertainty.
It is the uncertainty. Exactly.
I guess it's taking it from out of your mind and into reality, like, right, this is what we've actually got.
A lot of people are dealing with the unknown, not knowing exactly. And so this fear, the fear that grips people, do you know, it is, fear is one of the powerful, one of the most powerful emotions there is. And if you're controlled by your emotions, especially fear, then, you know, a lot of what you're doing, it's going to be so problematic where it need not be.
Yeah.
So I would say if you're, you know, you're really worried about starting a business, just speak to somebody about your finances. If it's a financial aspect of it that's causing you the stress and anxiety, speak to somebody. A lot of the times, once you know what you're working with, it's like baking a cake. If you're not sure the ingredients that you need, do you know what I mean?
Just worrying about, have I got enough?
Exactly. Or hoping for the best. Or just worrying about, is it going to turn out? Once you have the right ingredients, you're confident then to go ahead and do what needs to bake that cake.
Bake that cake.
Yeah.
And then enjoy that cake when
Absolutely.
It's ready.
Absolutely.
I love this cake analogy.
Eliminate that anxiety. It's about the knowledge, because knowledge is, we say knowledge is power.
Absolutely. I love that. And do you know what you're saying about what your dad used to always say? My dad used to always say that. He used to always say, knowledge is power. Stephanie, knowledge is power. So, okay. But we're saying that knowledge is power. I know that financial language, terminologies, I know so many people that immediately tense up whenever you use a word like inflation, growth rates, like anything that's financial lingo. It's like,
Absolutely.
I don't know. What is this? Like dark arts, this magic. Like, I don't get it. And they clam up, they tense up. And it goes back to your point of they just kind of out of sight, out of mind. They hide it away. They don't want to look at it. Can you break down, can you debunk some of the most common sort of terminologies that people might be put off by?
Well, as you said, I mean, before I answer that, the Financial Times did a survey and found that 90% of people in the UK admitted that they learned nothing at all or very little about financial education.
Not at all surprised.
Absolutely. So any words regarding other than budgeting, saving and finance, which people understand, all of those other terms, like you said, inflation, do you know what I mean? Mm. All of those type of financial language throws people completely off, yeah. Knocks their confidence to the floor.
Exactly.
So I felt, I mean, I'm in Harley Street, I'm working with experts in their field. But when it comes to money, they almost regressed to like a childlike state. And you see in their whole body language, it's because they're so afraid and fearful of, you know, what money means to them. Mm. And so just working with just basic knowledge, taking them back to school, you know, almost primary school language to help them understand. And once they begin to understand, that fear, that dread, it just dissipates. It just disappears.
Well, if you can't even speak the language, how are you expected to get a handle on these basics? So what are the top kind of terms that you can give us some quick helpful definitions of?
Right, okay. So I would say top terms is, you know, understand for yourself that, you know, there are some books and that people can read to help them with financial terms. But just stick with the basic, whatever you're looking for, whether it's a loan, whether it's an overdraft, whether it's a mortgage, just stick with, you know, the basic language that you know that you're comfortable with. Don't get into anything that causes you the anxiety. Do you know what I mean? Yes, we know about inflation and what does it mean to people. But if it's not going to affect you, then I would say, you know, that you don't need to worry about that.
But do you think that wider macroeconomic factors like inflation and how markets are performing, how much do they affect the individual? Because they might think, oh, it doesn't affect me, that's over there. But actually, we're all pieces of the same puzzle, aren't we?
Absolutely. So, for example, with inflation, we know that that's grown, you know, it's gone up way past whatever that it was in years. And so, yes, of course it's going to. So, for example, if you're saving, if you've got money in your savings account, that money, you know, because inflation will go up, what you've saved, £2,000 this year, that £2,000, that your buying power will be less next year, depending on what the inflation rate is. Mm. And so those are the things that I explain to people. So some people think, oh, there's savings. A lot of people have got quite a bit of savings, but then...
you're effectively losing money, aren't
absolutely,
you?
Mm. Absolutely. And so they would have credit card debt, say £5,000 in credit card debt, but £5,000 in savings, and think, well, I've got this savings, but actually your money is losing money every year because when inflation, whatever the inflation rate is, your money will be devalued to that amount of money.
Yeah.
So I would say take a chunk, as painful as it is, out of your savings to pay off that debt, because they're earning 2-3% interest on their savings, but yet they're paying 18.9% on credit card debt.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is simple numbers. Like, I think it is really important to break it down, and it does really make me angry that these basics are not taught.
Absolutely.
At secondary school, because it isn't rocket science. As you say, if you've got 18.9% interest on credit card debt and you're earning 2% on, if you're lucky, on your savings account, and the rate of inflation is 10%, it's just, I think also when you sort of throw numbers out, percentages, it's a bit like, oh, but it's just like, look, just
breaking it down.
Calm down, break it down. It's like when you look at it clearly like that, it's, you need to kind of overcome that hurdle to start taking control. Quick one, I need to tell you a bit about Patreon. If you haven't heard of it before, Patreon is the creator platform that enables people like you to support podcasters like me. I actually studied art history for all of 5 minutes, which is where the whole idea of patronage, aka financially supporting artists, comes from. Kings and queens would commission artists to create paintings to adorn their castle walls. Upper class lords and ladies celebrated their accomplishments by using their wealth to support the arts. And during the Italian Renaissance, my favourite era, the Medicis actually developed a close bond with Michelangelo, who painted the Sistine Chapel, and the Sforza family supported Da Vinci, who helped name Leonardo DiCaprio. That is a true story, by the way. Anyway, I know that you're not here for a history lesson thrown in to your business studies class, but if you're feeling like a rich Renaissance royal who wants to support your very own little Botticelli here, then Patreon is the solution for you. Simply tap the link in the show notes to select your tier of patronage to support the show. It starts from a low amount and it really means a lot to help me to continue producing these interviews that I hope you enjoy. Thank you so much for listening. Let's get back into the episode. So just again, coming back to, you know, I want to try and keep that kind of business lens. So getting a handle on, you know, how much it would cost to start a business, what's the buffer you've got in mind? I know that having a 6 month sort of
emergency fund
is always, you know, you want to build that up first. Sure. Before you go and, you know, take a risk. How about when it comes, you mentioned before about taking out loans. How much do you know about other forms of business financing? So whether it's venture capital, whether it's grants, what are the other kind of financing options that entrepreneurs would have available?
Well, there are a few other options, but I would say that, you know, the payback loan, you know, those loans that were people were offered and now they have to, you know, pay these loans back. I mean, it's understanding. I think you've got to do a lot of projection and work alongside somebody just to project those figures for you. What are they going to look like? Mm. Because yes, I mean, obviously you're going to need money to start up with, but you have to understand that anything can happen at any time. So as you quite rightly said, that emergency fund that is so, so important to have built up before you, if you can, because I mean, it's not always possible when an unexpected event could happen that could wipe out your emergency fund. Mm. I would also say once you've got good credit, 0% credit cards, they are very good. And I really advise, I live my life by 0% credit cards.
Okay.
Yeah. I've written a book called Think Like a Bank.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that as well.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. So basically, working in the bank, I saw how much money they was making from people like yourself and me in interest charges and financial products like mortgages, loans that we take out, that we, you know, that we have to pay, you know, quite a bit of interest on. And I thought, hold on, I can do that for myself. So I use the bank's money using a 0% credit card. You get X amount of time, whether depending on how good your credit is, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, a year to use the card, and then whatever you've used on that card, you need to pay it back within that agreed time of that term. Mm. If, however, you're not, you know, you say you've got 2 months left or a month left and realise you've still got quite a balance on that credit card, you can then look for another 0% credit card and transfer the money onto that.
Okay, that all sounds really scary and dangerous to me, right. I'm going to be honest.
Sure.
So I think especially for people who struggle with self-discipline,
sure,
and are lured by these other things they can spend money on, mm-hmm, and, you know, the world of the micro ecosystem of entrepreneurship, especially, mm-hmm, you know, if you spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, it's very easy to rubberneck and be a victim of the comparisonitis, you know, and look at, oh, so and so, they've got a swanky office.
Yeah.
These guys have got, you know, like flashy, like neon light. They've just hired three people. So there's a lot of that kind of vanity stuff that, you know, all requires money. So something like these credit cards or, you know, other sort of financing options, it sounds like it could be a very slippery slope for some people.
It could be, but it's only when you've got that education that, mm-hmm, I work with people to make sure they fully understand what they're doing before they would ever take that step. Because you're quite right. If you don't know what you're doing, you could go on a tandem and get yourself in so much debt. So it's understanding what is available to you, what can work for you, and then you make the decision, the informed decision is as to do you want to go with that financial product.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how much you'll be able to speak to this, but I guess when it comes to you know, using money as a tool either for the things that you need, you know, mm-hmm, I think necessities
wants
versus, you know, riskier investments, mm-hmm, again through the lens of business, because you know, if we look at what's really necessary for a business today, you need the basic tech, right? You need, and when I say basic tech, I mean like a laptop, you know? I mean, that was actually my investment when I set up my last business. My investment was my laptop and whatever I needed to pay my accountant to just get started.
Sure.
So you've got some of those, and like you need access to email, some of the tech subscriptions and everything else. And then maybe you start to kind of outsource some of your tasks to a VA, for example, to free up more of your time so you can focus on building your business. But again, with that idea of LinkedIn comparisonitis, what can you say to me and our listeners? How can you help discern between, oh yeah, I'll hire more people because then I'm even more freed up to go and schmooze investors or win new clients, versus what you actually need? Because at some point you've got to take a risk, is what I'm saying. So what can you speak to in terms of assessing that risk tolerance? You've got to spend money to make money, but not going too far with it.
Yeah. Well, everybody's risk adverse is on a different level. So you have to understand that for you, because you don't want to take a risk and then you're stressing, it's affecting you psychologically. So that, you know, what is it going to cost you? And I say to people, whenever they're going to step out and do anything, make any financial decisions, what is it going to cost you? Not just financially, psychologically, emotionally. And so like you say, you know, you're looking on LinkedIn and you've seen all these other people, the comparison, or whether you're on social media as an individual and looking and you're seeing all these people having all these things. For one, you don't know how they've got it, what they've had to do to get it.
Yeah.
But you have to know for yourself, is this an actual need or is it a want? You have to make that decision for yourself. Does your business actually need this right now, or is it something that you can do, or you know, you can find, you know, you can maybe have to find a volunteer to do what you need doing in the meantime whilst you're building that business? And at some point when you've got some revenue there, you've got some capital there, you can then obviously pay, you know, spend some money to employ somebody. But some people, you know, when they first start a business, they want everything right now, today.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's not possible. And they may, you know, employ people and then realize, oh my goodness, my business is not, they've projected all these things, my business is not, you know, making the money that I projected. Then how's that going to fit, you know, affect you psychologically?
Start sinking.
Absolutely. And so it really is so important to really understand for yourself what, I mean, we have to make risk, we have to take that step. Some people, and that goes back to your psychology of money. What does it mean to you? Do you know what I mean? What is your relationship with money? What is your attitude towards money? Because if you feel that wherever your money management practices have derived from, if it's been, if it serves you well, then you may be able to take that risk and, you know, not have the anxiety and not have the stress. But if you feel that, you know, if you've had bad money habits and you're just taking on all these different things, not counting the cost, as I said, psychologically, financially, emotionally, then, you know, you will get to a place where you will, you know, be stuck. And obviously it's going to affect your performance, affect your business. It has such a knock-on effect.
Yeah, yeah. I love the creative thinking that you share there a little bit as well, with different possible solutions. You mentioned about, you know, could you get a volunteer? Could you get an intern, you know, not to exploit, you know, any bad labor practices, but are there other ways? Do you know, I came across something yesterday, which was around, there's another startup that's helping to aggregate a load of these big subscriptions for other startups.
Oh, wow.
So that you can get the bulk benefit, you know, discounts that the big companies do. So there's things, just little things like that that can help. But I guess you don't want to go too far down the other end of really scrimping and saving.
Absolutely.
Obviously, there were moments in your life you had to do that. There are moments in many people's life where you have to really look after the pennies. But if, depending on your particular situation, you can spend too long overthinking, you know, sweating the small stuff. Sometimes you got to be like, look, get your bases sorted, cover, you know, cover all your bases, get a firm handle on things, And then, you know, as long as we're being sensible about it.
Absolutely. I think that really goes back to your personal, because my area of expertise is personal finance. And I think that really mirrors when you go into business. So if you're quite frugal and, you know, frugal about your money and whatever, that will, you know, you could be waiting too long and thinking, oh, I can't do it. I can't spend, I can't employ somebody.
Yeah.
That really mirrors how you are with your money in business.
Yeah, that really resonates. I'm really glad you say that, because I know a lot of the talk has been like slippery slope, getting, you know, lured by the social media machine and, you know, going overboard with the, you know, credit cards and getting yourself into debt and all that horrible stuff. But what you've just said there really resonates more with me in particular, because I am more kind of frugal, more saving, and you're totally right. My money, my personal money mindset,
absolutely
came through in my business. I don't think I was risky enough mm-hmm. with my business. I think I did play it too safe. I was so cautious, and like opportunities can pass you by.
Yeah,
it can be the opposite.
Absolutely.
What I used to think of is, I think the best analogy for business in general is driving. Mm-hmm. I think driving a car is the best way to kind of describe what it is like to run a business. You've got a destination in your sat nav, you got to work out how to get there. There might be other passengers in the car with you that are coming along for the ride. You might have some tunes to stick on to motivate people. And linking it to this part of the conversation here, it's almost like, you know, being too overly cautious and sweating the small stuff is like going too slow on the motorway, which can be just dangerous. As if not more dangerous.
Yes, absolutely.
So I feel like I was driving too slow on the motorway. So mm-hmm. you've still got to have that level of confidence, haven't you, to succeed.
Has it changed now?
Yeah, but it is, you know, like anything. Thank you for asking me the question. I'm usually the interviewer, but it's not lost on me how much time it takes to rewire the way that you think,
absolutely.
To shift your mindset, to change your habits. And I think you've got to be, you know, I need to take my own advice, what I'm mm-hmm. about to say. You've got to be kind on yourself. Mm-hmm. You were saying before about instant gratification, wanting things, you know, straight away. It's the same thing with the money mindset. I can imagine in your practice as well, you see people that just want to have these things solved. But when it's in your head and your emotions, your mind, everything, that's a lot to unpick and rewire.
Absolutely.
It takes time.
Absolutely.
So the answer is yes. The first step, as always, is being aware.
Mm-hmm.
And then being aware even when you relapse and you step back on those things and be like, remember when you did it that way before? Maybe try it like this. And it's like you're overcoming a fear.
Yeah.
You've got to take small baby steps.
Yes.
Maybe let's go a bit further here. It didn't work. Okay, that's fine. That's, you know. Is there any sort of time frame that you can speak to that? You know, I'm sure it's how long is a piece of string, but in your practice, in your field of work, is there a rough ballpark of how long it would take for someone to rewire?
Sure.
Their
patterns? When I run my financial boot camp, it's a whole day boot camp. It's intense. It's a boot camp, right? So you know you're going there for some kind of change. The awareness that is that I raise and the light bulb moments that people have, just that one day, laying that foundation, do you know what I mean? Setting that foundation, that is the start of the journey. Because people come in so unaware. As I said, I'm working with people from all different walks of life. Just having that awareness is such a rude awakening, I would say. And I think after that, just working with people. So as you said, it's how long is a piece of string? Because as you probably might experience, I don't know if you've got siblings, but, you know, you can have, you know, your own siblings that come from the same household. Their money management practices are completely different.
Mm.
And it's like, what? Do you know what I mean? We've all had the same experience.
Yeah, funny that.
So, absolutely. And so somebody could be really good with their money, another person's just really just a spendthrift. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
How funny.
And somebody's really frugal.
Yeah.
So, and you've all come from learnt the same kind of, been exposed to the same thing.
That's so funny, isn't it? Because I can totally imagine, I'm sure I know some individuals as well who have maybe grown up in a frugal household.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like you, I guess, where it's like, that taught me a good lesson, that sort of rubbed off on you. And I know other people who would say the opposite. You know, we all create our own narratives. They'd say, oh, because I grew up in a frugal household, now I need to, you know, enjoy my money. I never got to have it as a kid. You
absolutely. Know? And so it's how we internalize it, how we process how our experiences will influence our behavior with money, our attitudes towards money, our relationship with money. And so answering your question, it is such an individual thing.
Yeah.
Working with partners, or sometimes I feel like I have to be the referee, right? Because, do you know what I mean? They're coming from two different walks of life.
Mm.
And so trying to bring them together to a common ground where they can work together to set their financial goals, you know, work through their financial situation together, it can be so challenging with one couple and another couple.
Yeah.
It just depends where you are and how willing you are to work through this process of unlearning and relearning.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it takes time, patience.
Absolutely.
You got to be kind on yourself while you're going through
that.
Absolutely,
and it's okay if things... Because 1 month is, you know, 1 month can be completely different to the next month. An unexpected event can happen.
Yeah.
A job loss, somebody's ill, a relationship break. That just throws your budget in and everything out the window. And it's about how do I contain them? How do I ground you to help you get back on track?
Yeah, life happens.
Absolutely.
All right, one of my last questions, which I feel, as always run out of time. I always would love to ask many more, but can you give any really practical, like real world tips that can help us, whether it's as individuals, in a partnership, with friends, how can we talk about it more? Because I do feel that talking about money, whether it's personal finances or business, I feel like that is a huge barrier to making more progress.
Yeah.
I was saying before, destigmatizing it, taking the taboo away from it, again, especially as women as well. What can we do to kind of overcome the awkwardness, to start bringing it into conversation a bit more?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, we have gatherings as women, we're going out as women, we have WhatsApp groups, you know, we're on social media a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? And I feel it's something that, you know, a lot of people, because where they are financially, there's a lot of shame, embarrassment, and all of that stigma that goes with it. But I think, you know, just being open, sharing your story.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Well, and I think this is the perfect time because of the cost of living crisis. So this isn't the time for people to look down at the next person because, you know, most people are affected in one way or another.
Yeah.
And just sharing some of your experiences could really be so helpful, as basic as it may be. It could really be just, you know, people think, oh my God, I'm going through the same experience. Just being, you know, just I would say be open and share as much as you can. Feel comfortable with, do you know, with the people you feel safe with.
Yeah.
I think that's so important.
Yeah, nice, lovely. Norma, thank you so much for your time. What a pleasure, what a privilege to hear some of your story and hear some of your pearls of wisdom. Finally, before we wrap, is there anything else that you'd like to share that I haven't already asked you about? You think, oh, I wish you'd asked me that question. Anything that I haven't already covered?
I just think that, you know, money and mental health is such an important topic, subject, that really needs to be exposed. Next month is Mental Health Month. The 13th to the 19th is Mental Health Week, and they're going to be campaigning with, you know, with regards to all different issues of mental health. Money and mental health is not, it's just not out there. People are not talking about it. And I think it's something that really needs to get the exposure so that people can start talking about it, so that we can start looking at ways to help people more.
Yeah, wonderful. Norma, you're doing incredible work. Well done you.
Thank you.
I'm so impressed and in awe of everything you're doing. So big pat on the back. Well done.
Thank you.
I hope you really enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much as well for listening and supporting the show. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. It doesn't cost anything. And episodes are weekly, so tune in to next week's episode and hopefully see you there.